Hi, welcome to another of our Coffee Time Chats. Today we're joined by Neil Grammer of Strategic Solution Partners. In this discussion, we look at the critical importance of ensuring the hotel revenue you have generated actually makes it to the bank. We explore how the pandemic and current staffing shortages have highlighted financial control and process problems that can lead to significant risks. We dig into a number of common risks present right now, ways to resolve these by implementing an internal control framework, and how to continually improve through the utilization of an internal control questionnaire. Really hope you enjoy the conversation. Let's get started. Hey, welcome, Neil. Thanks for joining us. How are things with you? You well?
I'm well, thanks. Doing well. Springtime here in DC, always beautiful.
Excellent. Good to hear springtime is on its way. I think everyone needs some springtime at the moment.
Yes.
Before we get started into our topic, and I'll mention that in a moment, would you be so kind to introduce yourself to those who are watching us and to those who are listening to us on the podcast? That would be really appreciated.
Sure. Neil Grammer. I'm a strategic member of Strategic Solutions Partners and have been for about 2 years now, working as their internal control, financial control type person for hospitality. And prior to that, I was the chief audit executive for Interstate Hotels and did some time at the internal audit department of Marriott International, also in the hospitality space, as well as other industries in healthcare, not-for-profit, and public accounting in my background. Have my own firm now, and I'm strategically aligned with Strategic Solutions, Grammer and Associates, and I do consulting work with some of the bigger, well-known management companies for hospitality in the U.S.
Right. Super. Thank you so much. Well, as you say, I mean, I know you were talking there about audit and controls, and that's what we're gonna touch on today, and dig into that because it kind of aligns to what we're going to talk about. But I've always loved the phrase "revenue is vanity, profit is sanity," and I think looking at what's happened over the last couple of years, we've seen the value of being profitable. And so, with that in mind, now that occupancy is ramping up, we're going to discuss how we can balance a tight staffing market and ensuring that the internal controls are in place and working so that that long-awaited revenue that we've been hankering for to come back is now being properly captured, reported, and most importantly, also making it into the bank. So, considering what has gone on and some of the challenges that are being faced, can you just kind of give us a kind of a headline overview at the moment as to what are some of the challenges that are being faced? And we'll dig a little bit deeper into some of these, but what are some of the headline challenges about, you know, for hotels in terms of having that financial efficiency that can take that revenue and really drive it down into the bottom line and into the bank?
Sure. Well, the obvious first way to start is that with the reduction in staffing due to the pandemic and obviously occupancy down, there is not the opportunity to do a couple of things. One, segregate duties so that someone that is responsible, say, for collecting cash is also not the same person that's reconciling the cash and depositing the cash.
Yeah.
So we typically had at least two people doing those functions in the hotels in the past. Well, some of the hotels that I've talked to, that ability to segregate the duties went out the window with the pandemic. So
Right. Okay.
I had to accept those risks. But now that we're ramping back up, we have to start to think about those things as to how do we get back to proper segregation of duties and internal controls to make sure, as you said, that the revenue that people so eloquently earned actually makes it into the owner's bank account. So those are the two biggest challenges, is making sure that we are able to have the staffing levels to do the proper segregation of duties. And then the second piece of that is, how do we train our people that may be new to the industry or forgotten how to do things and have not been able to do things for the past 2 years? How do we train them back into the right habits?
Mm-hmm. Just picking up, and we're going to dig into some of these, just picking up on around the impact of the staffing issue, and as you highlighted there around training, has the pandemic flagged up at all with the loss of staff that maybe the internal controls, internal processes that were maybe happened automatically because people have been doing those roles for a while, now that those people aren't there, did that also flag up that not only is it a people issue, but maybe some of the internal controls and processes that thought were in place may not have been quite as tight or procedurized as they may have been? Would that be a fair point?
Yeah, and I think even prior to the pandemic, that was the case. You know, 2008 was our last big economic issue.
Yeah, good point. Yeah.
And we never really ramped back up from that. Mm-hmm. To the what I would consider robust internal controls and procedures.
Right.
The best run hotels and companies that I've come across did pay attention to that and have robust processes and procedures at every level. And more importantly, have a tool, which I'll call an internal control questionnaire or self-audit. It's kind of same nomenclature. Mm-hmm. Those tools are very helpful. And
right.
And that's where this process that I'm talking about of leveraging what you have to get the most out of the internal control environment is so important. It really starts with a strong tool and strong understanding of what the control procedures are, and more importantly, why we do them. Because if you can teach someone why they're doing what they do, I think it helps them execute the control better, rather than, it's almost like a child. You can tell them what to do, but if you show them what to do and why it impacts their life, usually get better results. So I always say to leverage the staffing levels that you have, even prior to the pandemic, the best results typically were procedures were well documented, there was a self-audit process in place, and then overarching that was a continuous process improvement program at that hotel, at that company, that always started at the bottom and kind of worked its way up to the top. I like to use the visual of a pyramid, that it really starts at the associate level, having them understand the controls and why they're doing it, and then having people that they report to monitor those controls and report on those controls and continuously improve on those controls. And then you can keep going up to the next level at the executive committee level at the hotel, that they monitor and make sure that all that's being done on the daily. Then there's some that are weekly, some that are monthly, some that are annually level. And that data gets compiled. And if you have enough data across multiple hotels or even within your own hotel, you can start to see patterns where training may be necessary, where controls need to be refined, where you may be able to use technology to automate that control, or you may need to replace somebody because they don't seem to either embrace the control, or maybe they understand it a little too well and take advantage of that control. So that's kind of the foundation I like to build, is from the process and procedure level, training the associate, getting the buy-in, and then beginning the layering of the pyramid.
So just
to a point where.
So just coming back to that point, you used the phrase about a control framework.
Yes.
You mentioned that because you kind of layered lots of bits in there that we'll kind of try and unpick. So kind of taking you. Use your pyramid, kind of, where you're saying layering up. So coming back down, you've got to almost, in a sense, put a framework. How do you when you talk about a framework and you talk about controls, to me, and I'm not a finance expert in my background, so to me there just seems to be whole heaps of controls. And if I'm trying to build some kind of integrated framework around that, where do I start? What are some of the thought processes? How do I identify where some of the most crucial elements might be to consider first and foremost?
Very good point. What I just described really is the internal control framework. There are a couple of key components that I talked about, the policies and procedures, and some of the control activities at the baseline level.
Yeah.
And then there are monitoring controls and activities that make sure that those policies, procedures, and activities at the process level are being done. And then there is what we call, I'll call it the environment that the controls exist within. And that can constitute a multitude of things, including how do we train people, but also how do we hire them? What are the criteria that we have to hire them so that we're not hiring people who can't understand the processes and procedures and why we're doing them, or we hire people who may have a history of not complying with those types of policies and procedures. So typically a background check would involve that. So you have these monitoring activities, you have the actual control activities, then you have an overarching framework of what I'll call the control environment that those controls exist within, so that there's constant monitoring and improvement going on all the time. And you can utilize data also to make sure that you can monitor and effectively understand where the problems are occurring. And I like to call that phase the risk assessment phase.
Right. Okay. I was going to ask about that because if I'm a hotel that hasn't been doing it as well, or a hotel that it's really highlighted during the pandemic that my procedures, my policies, my controls are not where they should be, I've got to kind of define where I want to be spending that time and energy. And I've got to find a quick way of addressing those core areas first and foremost. So I was going to touch on, I'm assuming it was risk-based. So can you just talk to that bit and maybe possibly then through that, if it's linked, highlight some of the higher end risks that you think we should be looking at addressing quickly?
Sure. So once you have some of this data, you have these underlying processes built out, you can take the data and understand where risks seem to be coming coming up through either the monitoring process, or you may be in the reconciliation process losing money and not capturing all of the revenue that needs to go to the bank. So what we do is we evaluate the data. We also interview the people who are at the control level and the control activity level to understand where they see problems. And they may say, you know, we're not training our people well enough, we're not getting the results, or they don't have enough time to do things. So we, based on the data and the interviews, come up with what we call a risk assessment. And we look at the overall process and say, this process, the risk seem to be in these 2, 3, 4, 5 major areas.
Right.
And then we drill down to understand why those controls aren't working effectively. And that's where we then do remediation efforts. And so, as I talked about before in the framework, and you can do this at a hotel level, a department level, a corporate level.
Okay.
You can look at each of the processes, monitor the activities, look at the data and the results, and then begin that continuous process improvement to identify where we're having issues. The things that we did in order to assess risk, we would actually interview hotel people, we would interview regional people, we would interview corporate people, and come up with what are the things that, I like to use the phrase, keep you up at night. What are the things that, if you were sleeping and woke up, what are the things that you think about? And you'd be surprised at the level of specificity that comes from people.
Are there any sort of three or four that seem to come up regularly, kind of core areas that you're seeing that are fairly common that others may relate to?
Yeah, there's so many, but I'll kind of focus on the ones around the revenue area since we're talking about revenue. So, you know, things that I've had to do projects on at hospitality companies because these things were not monitored. They weren't, the controls around them weren't very good. Mm-hmm. The staffing wasn't trained. These are things that typically in the front office, revenue generation, revenue capture, all the way to the bank, things happen. So one, obviously, is cash.
Yeah.
So if you're not counting cash daily, you are susceptible to theft, fraud, or just inaccurate reporting. So we always stress, and it's a basic for most hotels, even though cash is going away for the most part, mm-hmm. that you have to count cash every day and make sure that it's reconciled and that the cash in excess of your minimum is being collected and taken to the bank on a daily, if not, you know, I'll settle for every other day, but I'd like it to be done daily.
Yeah.
The second is credit cards for a variety of reasons. Most of our revenue is captured via credit card now, mm-hmm. And should be transmitted daily. And sometimes that can occur, for instance, over a weekend, but it should be done daily, and more importantly, make sure that it actually transmitted and was received, because right. often that does not occur. And the reason you do that, obviously, is to get credit for it as soon as possible, because it's mm-hmm. always a delay in credit card credits being coming back to the hotel.
Yeah.
But if you wait over 3 to 4 days, sometimes you get downgraded is the term in the credit card industry, because you did not transmit right away. Your interchange rate may go from, I'll use an example, cost you 5 cents, it may go to 10 cents for that transaction because you waited a few days longer than you should have.
Gotcha.
The next is accounts receivable.
Right.
And accounts receivable, if you have clients that are on credit, typically can get out of control quickly, especially now that in the pandemic, a lot of hotels have had to rely on OTAs or online travel agencies mm-hmm. for a lot of their revenue. And a lot of those OTAs have very complex billing processes that you have to have a skilled person be involved in order to make sure that you get the credit and provide all the backup to the OTA in order to get your payments back.
Right.
I've seen nightmare scenarios where where accounts receivable with OTAs are months behind and therefore it becomes a nightmare reconciling and then spending literally tens of thousands of dollars to get someone to come in and fix.
Wow.
And then you also run the risk of going beyond the time limits that the OTAs allow to collect and losing that revenue. So I've seen where people who are either behind because they have too many accounts to do, aren't trained properly, and then obviously aren't monitored, where they, instead of doing the billing, they will take what balance is in the account, let's say in Trevor Grant's account, they'll take that account, put it into a house account, and then create a new receivable, thereby changing the aging
right,
okay. from 90 days back to current. And so you'll see Trevor Grant 1, Trevor Grant 2, Trevor Grant 3, and that's a red flag when you look at the aging.
What a nightmare.
That they're re-aging because they either are one, behind and can't keep up, or mm-hmm. two, they're taking and stealing cash and putting it onto an accounts receivable account. So you have to review the aging, if not daily, at least weekly, to make sure you understand all the accounts and that you're up to date on OTAs. The third is this seems basic, but when you have staffing turnover, limited staffing, these basics on the front desk, looking at the rate variance report, the rate override report, the comp room report, the over to credit limit report, and one that I think is not utilized effectively is the housekeeping discrepancy report.
Right.
All those reports show activity that should be understood and any unusual items investigated immediately. So rate variance is obvious. If someone's giving rates different from what was the rate was booked at, we need to understand why that is. Is it a service issue? Is it a friend of the front desk person or the salesperson? Whatever it may be, we need to understand that. The over the credit limit report, do we have people in house that we need to rebill because they've exceeded their credit limit, or whatever is going on with that guest? Maybe an F&B, could be anything. But I'll get to the housekeeping discrepancy report, because now more than ever, the lack of people being able to trained and understand how that report works, as well as the high usage of agencies to do our housekeeping, that report often gets overlooked. But that is the best way to make sure that all the revenue in-house, meaning all the rooms that we sold last night, actually we have accounted for.
Yeah.
And if we have vacant, dirty rooms that are supposed to be vacant ready, and we did not capture any revenue for that room, that is a red flag that rooms are being sold to someone other than the owner
the
hotel. Right. So that report to me is very important and should be looked at daily and investigated, and understand why there are discrepancies between what we've sold per the PMS system and what was cleaned and inspected by the housekeeping team. So that's another area to focus on. And then looking at house accounts. House accounts are a great way to hide things from a variety of people, especially with skilled front desk people. So you want to look at that daily to make sure that you understand why, what's in the house accounts, and who's putting them in there, and why they're in there, and why they may stay in there beyond one day. So those are things that I think should be looked at daily.
So what's an example of things going into house accounts?
The types of things.
Yeah.
Say we comped a person a room because of a service issue. Mm-hmm. So we put it in the house account until checkout, or the salesperson once again was eating at the restaurant, unauthorized lunch at the restaurant went to a house account. Or someone has moved an account from the city ledger or the accounts receivable ledger to the house account in order to then rebill it to get it current. Those types of things. House accounts kind of a catch-all.
Yeah.
When you're trying to move things.
It's like the other.
Exactly. And also cash.
Yeah.
You can move a paid out. So a guest pays in cash. You move that cash payment or that guest account to a house account, then back, and then move it to another room, and then move it to another room. And then all of a sudden, you created kind of a tough audit trail to follow. And then the cash is missing. So you leave it on the house account because everything will balance, but the cash is gone. So it's a catch-all for fraud as well as abuse.
Wow. Okay.
And the last area is, it's not a daily control, but it is a control mindset, especially coming out of the pandemic, is around credit policy.
Right.
So we have a lot of new business coming in, and we're doing a lot of shoulder work with Smurfs. Our busiest days typically right now are on Thursday through Sunday, because of the people want to get out of their houses and and vacation, mm-hmm. but the business travelers during the Tuesday through Thursday just aren't there anymore. So a lot of our business is on the weekends with leisure travel and non-group. But groups are starting to come back, mm-hmm. and Smurfs are starting to come back, the Smurf groups, social groups. Mm-hmm. And we are eager to get that revenue. We want that revenue. Those groups that we used to have, they're coming back. They want to have their meetings again. Well, as you may know, a lot of things have changed financially for a lot of organizations and companies. We need to really rerun the credit for those groups and make sure that they're still viable.
Yeah.
We also need to understand and maybe be a little less zealous to take some of this group without doing advanced deposits. And just being very careful about how we bring the groups in and really examining and making sure that the revenue we're getting is actually good revenue and we'll make it to the bottom line.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be spending all your time chasing it.
Exactly. And we don't have anyone to chase.
Well, that was, which leads me on, because, I mean, there are some very, I'm not going to say straightforward examples, but, you know, they seem standard elements of a hotel business where there is areas of quite considerable risk, listening to some of the examples you were talking about there. So back to your original point of, we now have less staff, and not only do we possibly have less staff, but we may have new staff because what we had before have now moved on. So we have a numbers issue, and we have a skills or level of knowledge issue. So coming back to your framework, how on earth, when we can see all these potential risks and now we've got less staff and new staff, I mean, seriously, how do we bring in some control around that?
Well, that's a tough one. There are two things I would suggest, and I'll never forget, one of my former colleagues asked me, after someone committed a pretty serious fraud that led to a change in policy around hiring, mm-hmm. which was, how do we stop having these thefts by our associates at the hotel level? And the first thing I said was, well, we have to have mandatory background checks of all our associates. So when you get an associate, make sure that they are not someone that has taken advantage of a company in the past. But the next level is, what are the tools that we can use to help them? And again, I go back to basic policies and procedures, and I've been working with hotels for 25 years. The basic controls are the same, whether I'm, when I was working at Marriott to Interstate, I've worked in every brand possible, Hilton Hotels, IHG hotels, Marriott hotels, mm-hmm. Starwood hotels back in the day. The basics are all the same, the policies and procedures. You could take a policy and procedure from Hilton, take it to a Marriott, and it will work fine, mm-hmm. in terms of the basic controls over cash and policies around the activities of a hotel.
Gotcha.
The only things that are different are the how we manage and put the framework around it. So I'm a strong advocate of what I call the internal control questionnaire, because that internal control questionnaire typically takes into account all of those policies and procedures. It's trying to address all the risks related to those actual procedures, and gives you a way to accumulate and ask questions and gather evidence as to whether or not that control is working. Mm-hmm. That includes making sure that the associate understands what they're doing and why.
Right.
So I'm a strong advocate of using the ICQ or self-audit tool as a training tool for your new associates and as a reinforcement tool for your senior or more experienced associates.
I've got you. So it's like their supervisors, managers, or just people who have been a bit,
So they... if I was a supervisor of the front desk, I would have the self-audit tool as a weekly reminder or monthly to sit with my team and go over each of those questions in the self-audit and say, are we doing these things? Ask them to bring evidence of that and have them repeat back to me why they are responsible for reviewing the daily rate variance report and what do you do with it if you have an issue. I would do a self-audit every month before I would turn in, say, a monthly self-audit to my exec team member, whoever that may be I'm reporting to. Mm-hmm. I'm a strong advocate of using that tool to train, but also to monitor and provide information up the pyramid, if you will,
yep,
to give an understanding, especially at the exec committee level. If I had all my department heads do their ICQ weekly or monthly and make sure that their associates all understand why they're doing it, and I get a self-audit result from that department, then I can look at that. And if it's done correctly and with honesty, I can understand where my risks are. Mm-hmm. If I'm not doing the rate variance report because I don't understand it, I have a shift that doesn't get it, then I can do and focus my scarce resources on that risk and retrain that group.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because we do still live in an environment sometimes where people are used to feeling, well, that's not my job. And that has shifted dramatically. So that comes back to your point of, here's a tool that you can use to guide where training and education might be needed. And then it also validates at a later point when you go back that training and education is being understood. Did I understand that correctly?
Very, very good summary there, Trevor. It's a great tool for many things. It can train, it can monitor, it can gather data. And there's so many other benefits, such as when external auditors come in, or sales tax auditors, or whoever's coming in, internal auditors like me, when we come in, or your regional team, when they come in, you can show them that you have evidence that you've trained and you've monitored the activity in your respective department.
Yeah.
And all that activity, it's you know, you think it takes a lot of time, but it really doesn't if you push down the effort to the lowest level. Mm-hmm. If staff understand what they're doing and why they do it and can give you the evidence that you then can monitor quickly and move up the chain, it really doesn't take much time. And that's where the scarce resource issue really comes into play, is you've got to have everyone that you have on your team understand what they're doing.
I think
you can't have any weak links.
I mean, that's what I've taken from this, is that at the end of the day, whereas before you may have one or two people responsible for given tasks, that's pretty much been obliterated. And also, even if we did come back to a point where that opportunity may exist to hire more people back and to find skilled people, there is an argument as if to say, do we, you know, we hear about the talking about revenue and marketing historically working in silos, and everyone trying to break down these silos and have greater understanding and greater communication. So there's almost an argument here to say, well, maybe this is actually the chance that, yes, you will have someone in your finance team that obviously is looking after the finance and has an overall arching remit for it, but pushing down the understanding of why these things are being done and the value of them would seem like, if there's anything positive that comes out of this, that would be the opportunity to do that, to educate, to train. I guess final thought from me listening to it is that it probably takes some time to set up and get right, but if it's set up and got right in the first instance, then it just becomes a rolling process, and you can then spot where the gaps are, and that comes back to your point about a constant evolution. I guess that's where bringing in somebody like you to come in as an external can help provide that knowledge, that expertise, help them to get on the right track and bring that development and expertise. Yeah,
very much so. And one thing that I didn't mention in terms of the framework is a phrase that I like to use. It's a powerful phrase, and a lot of it is intrinsic in that you think that it's there, but often it is not. And I call it tone at the top,
right?
Which means the leaders at the hotel, the leaders at the department level, the leaders in the corporate or regional level, all have to have the same approach and attitude toward controls, mm-hmm. meaning we are going to do this. We're going to put in a framework that will allow us to achieve this leveraged internal control framework. And here's how we're going to do it. And we have to have that tone at the top in order to succeed. If there's a weak link in there, and that's at the top of the pyramid, if the tone at the top is not there, then I can tell you it's very difficult to do the others.
Yeah, it just filters down, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yes.
Because people look up to the leadership, and if they're not buying into it, it's like, well, why do I have to do it? They're not doing it. They're not buying into it. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I'm conscious of your time, so I think what I've taken from this, I've summarized a little bit already, but I think for me, what you've highlighted is that as the focus, not so much just shifted, but obviously the need to drive revenues, you know, if the revenue isn't coming in, then at the end of the day, you know, we're not paying our bills. We don't exist. So it's natural post-COVID that the focus is on grabbing what demand is out there, driving revenues, maximizing that as much as we can. But I think what you've highlighted is it would be very easy to come back out, hotels back operating. Oh, we've lost a couple of people. We'll make it work because we've got a great team here, and not consciously recognize that there may be some actually potentially very damaging areas of risk that could be exposed either in the short term or medium term as we start to come out. And once we start to become busier, the ability to be able to spot that and get to it at that time is going to be harder, because that limited resource is now going to be stretched even further, delivering the service to the guests that are coming in.
Exactly. Couldn't have put it better. And I've seen this coming out of 2008. Mm-hmm. We never added back the same number of people that we had prior. And we never adjusted our control structure to reflect that we had less people. And therefore, I think we opened ourselves, and we did. We saw a lot of losses subsequent to that. I've seen some very big frauds as a result of that.
Wow.
Not putting back in the basics, going back to the associate level, training them properly, monitoring those controls, and using the tools that are out there, but also not having the right tone at the top.
Yeah.
And having leadership say, yes, drive revenue, but we've got to capture it. We've got an opportunity here now to do it right this time. Let's do it right and capture everything that we've earned.
Yeah. So revenue is vanity, profit is sanity, but capturing it and controlling it allows us to sleep at night.
Exactly. Don't want our revenue generators not sleeping at night.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Brilliant. Look, I'm conscious of your time. Really appreciate you joining us. I know it's kind of a higher level discussion, and there's loads that if anyone picks up or they have any questions or anything, you know, we'll make sure that there's ways that they can reach out, connect with you. And obviously if anyone is looking to get that expertise input, then of course, you know, you'd be happy to engage and have a conversation with them.
Of course.
But for now, thanks so much. Really appreciate you. Whilst worrying to see where the risks are, it's good to be consciously aware that they're out there and we need to do something about it. So thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for the opportunity, and appreciate your time.
Well, I hope that conversation was of interest, and thanks again to Neil for joining us. If you have any thoughts or views on this discussion, please feel free to reach out. We value your input, and we're happy to follow up with our guests. Also, if there are any topics that particularly interest you, or if there are any specific guests you would like to hear from, please do let us know. You can reach us via our social channels, or you can email us via insights@revenue-hub.com. That's insights at revenue-hub.com. And if you like what we're producing, please do subscribe through the podcast channel you're listening to. If you want to see the interview, you can find it on the Revenue Hub YouTube channel, and the link is in the podcast notes. And if you do watch it on YouTube, it would be great if you could give it a thumbs up or even subscribe. It really helps out the channel. Anyway, until next time, thanks for listening.